Hello and welcome to our Chuseok Holiday Special of Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. Instead of our usual program today, for this special, we'll be focusing on one theme, living with COVID. Since the world learned of a concerning outbreak of an unknown virus in the Chinese city of Wuhan in the last days of 2019, more than 200 million cases of COVID-19 have been reported around the world and more than 4.5 million deaths. Hopes grew when several vaccines were developed in unprecedented speeds and mass vaccination programs went underway in many countries. But the virus has turned out to be more resilient than initially thought or hoped, especially with variants emerging. And any thoughts of being able to completely eliminate the virus, it seems, now are long gone. The question has now become, how are we going to live with the virus and what does our future look like? Today, we'll be trying to answer that, speaking to experts and special guests in Korea and overseas. So let's begin this Living with COVID special of Korea 24. First, we'll be looking at the situation in South Korea, which has been experiencing its fourth wave of the pandemic over the last 2.5 months. And despite fast increasing vaccination rates, there has been little slowdown in daily reported cases. Still, health authorities have revealed that they're working on a plan to transition into a new system of COVID-19 management that focuses on coexisting with COVID-19 in normalized day-to-day life. To learn more about what they have in mind, we connect now with Dr. Brian Kim, an epidemiologist from the government's Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency, and he's been a regular guest on the show, keeping us up to date on the COVID-19 situation in Korea. And once again, he joins us on the line from the KDCA Situation Room. Dr. Kim, hello, and thank you for speaking with us once again.
Hello, and thank you for the invitation.
Could you brief us on the overview of the coronavirus situation in South Korea from when it first started in January 2020 to now?
Yes, it started from the December 2019, and overall situation in Korea has started on 20th of January 2020, and when the first case was confirmed. And a month later, the first surge was reported in Daegu due to private religious group, and there was a second surge in August mainly with the nightclub clusters in Itaewon. And fall of 2020 was relatively stable, as we had seen daily number of cases less than 100 per day. But starting from November, the daily number soared up to 1,200. And at the end of December, and lots of people call it the third wave. And it was the most challenging time due to the increased severe and fatal cases. And fortunately, the number reduced to 300 on January, but it has been maintained around 400 to 700 per day until June. And our first vaccination started on February, and as we had struggled in terms of securing the supply of vaccine initially, and now the situation got better. Mm. And as you mentioned, the fourth wave was started from July, and the daily number has been 1,300 to 2,100 since then. And there is no sign of major changes until now.
So why has this fourth wave, this latest wave of infections, been the largest? And why has it been such a struggle to try and get the numbers down this time?
Yes, the main reason for the impact of the fourth wave is because of the Delta variant. And due to its high transmissibility, the virus spread is very hard to catch up with what we have done so far. And this is not just for our country. Many other countries experienced unprecedented rise of the cases, and we are still in much better conditions than any other countries.
Mm. Still, despite this situation, the South Korean government said it's considering a gradual phasal transition into a new COVID-19 management system of living with the virus in a normal day-to-day life. Can you define for us what it means to coexist with COVID-19? And how would it be different from current social distancing rules?
Yeah, based on multiple evidences, COVID-19 will not be eradicated, and it will be with us, unfortunately. And living with COVID-19 means that we no longer consider it as a major public health threat because of the reduced severity and mortality through the vaccination. So once we reach the vaccination target in the country, very small proportion of infected people will develop severe diseases eventually. And once specific treatment measures also develops, and it will also support quick treatment in the local clinic. So overall burden of, for our healthcare capacities will be significantly reduced to the level of maybe seasonal influenza, hopefully. And so social distancing measures that we have implemented so far will no longer be required, and basic prevention measures in individual level will be rather be more promoted. And strict social measures that we have enforced will not be implemented anymore.
Right. So what are the conditions for that transition? When would be the right timing to go into that, especially as we are not seeing a slowdown in the number of cases right now, but we are seeing vaccinations rise? Would we still transition into that even if the numbers were similar to now in case numbers?
Yes, it is quite true. And many other countries, including Israel, U.S., U.K., and Singapore, eased their restriction based on high vaccination rates, but they ended up having a surge of the cases since then. And once the number of new cases rise, it is very difficult to control. So we are planning on very cautious step-wise ease of restrictions to minimize the chance of those kind of surge that other countries have experienced.
So for conditions for transition, 70% of the population fully vaccinated, is that the first condition that we need?
Yes, and 70% for entire population. And our overall target is 80% for adult population and 90% for elderly, because these groups are more vulnerable as they have pre-existing conditions and they are more likely to develop severe diseases. So achieving those kind of vaccination rate is one of the most important factor. And actually, based on a lot of reports from other countries, and COVID-19 specific medication is under clinical trial. And once it becomes widely available in the local clinic, it will be much easier for us to speed up this transition.
Even with this new system of coexisting with COVID-19 in place, I understand health authorities have been warning that we might still have to be wearing masks even indoors and even maybe outdoors as well.
Yes, that is quite true. And I think mask wearing will be maintained for a while, as it clearly reduces the risk of exposure. And actually, mask wearing would be the last thing to let go of. And it will be recommended, especially in crowded indoor settings. And it also has a certain level of visual effect for those who are wearing masks. And so I think it will take a while until we fully get rid of all the face masks.
I understand that booster shots are something that the government have said that they are already considering, especially for older vulnerable groups soon. But is there anything more that you can tell us? Where does the government stand on booster shots at the moment?
Yes, at this point, there is some controversy about the need of booster shots, especially for the general public. And some countries, including US, UK, Israel, already started their booster shots for general people. But WHO and ECDC is not in favor of booster shots yet due to inequality of access to the vaccination and also lack of scientific evidence at this point. And actually, we are planning to provide booster shots for those who are in high-risk groups, such as elderly and immunocompromised. And booster shots for general public may need more discussion and may need more evidences at this point.
I see. So just to be extra safe, for the most at-risk groups, they are perhaps South Korean government is perhaps considering booster shots, but for the general public, the government is waiting to see more evidence and if there is a need for it for now. Finally, Dr. Kim, what message would you have for the public in South Korea who've been living with this pandemic for the last year and a half, with now so many having been vaccinated, are hoping for a return to normalcy soon? What would you like to say to them?
Well, As you mentioned, it's been a year and 9 months since the beginning of this abnormal situation. And I'd like to deliver an encouraging message that we are now reaching to almost up to 70% of first dose vaccinated in the entire population. And we are having significantly low fatality compared to any other countries, thanks to many dedicated healthcare workers and relevant staffs. And also, active participation of people in terms of social distancing measure contributed all those better outcomes than any other countries. And we are one of the few countries that did not show exponential surge of the cases during the emergence of Delta variant. And I know it really is an exhausting battle against this virus, but we need to make a few more footsteps to get through this difficult time.
Well, we appreciate you updating us on the situation. We've been speaking to Dr. Brian Kim from the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency. Dr. Kim, thank you as always for speaking to us.
It is my pleasure. Thank you.
Now, as we've been discussing, South Korea has been racing to reach its vaccination target to fully vaccinate 70% of the population. As the vaccination drive got going in February, the country looked on at other countries, especially Israel, which had started its vaccination drive months earlier. But despite that head start, Israel is now in the midst of its third wave of the pandemic, reaching record high daily cases. In response, the nation has now started its booster shot program and is reportedly even considering a fourth dose of vaccines. Let's now connect with a medical expert in Israel to learn more and discuss what South Korea could take away from this situation as well. We have joining us on the line Professor Cyril Cohen, the head of the Laboratory of Tumor Immunology and Immunotherapy at Bar-Ilan University. Professor Cohen, thank you for connecting with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, for our listeners, can you walk us through the current coronavirus situation in Israel and how that situation has developed over the last year and a half from when the first case of COVID-19 was confirmed in Israel?
Yes. So let's start from the beginning. As you said, you know, around February 2020, a year and a half ago, we had our first cases of COVID-19, like most of the countries. Actually, the good thing was that Israel was able to shut down any air traffic. And therefore, during our first wave, we had only, unfortunately, but only 300 people that died of COVID-19. So we were able to contain that. And then we opened quite quickly around May, June, and we started to see a rise in the cases, which brought us to a year ago, September, when we decided about our second lockdown. And from there, I would say we had a very, problematic fall, beginning of winter, especially with the arrival of the Alpha variant. And in January, actually, it was our worst month, January 2021, 8-9 months ago, when we had almost 1,500 people that died of COVID-19 during that month. It was our worst month. But on the other hand, at the same time, we started vaccinating, and quite quickly, within 2 to 3 weeks after vaccination, we started to see hints that people that were vaccinated, mainly 60-year-old plus, were less present in hospitals. And in February, actually, we had vaccinated around 40% of the population. And by end of March, we reached around 60, almost, you know, between 50 to 60% of the population. And then from that moment on, we just saw a decrease in contaminations. We were closing our hospital, units for COVID-19. Really, every week was better than the previous one. And in June, that was amazing. We had only a single digit number of daily contaminations, like 4 contaminations, and most of them were actually not in Israel, but at the airport, that were detected at the airport. So we thought that it was over, and we lifted all the regulations, including masks indoors, you know, green pass, etc. But unfortunately, the Delta variant arrived, And basically from July, like 2 months ago, we had a very steep rise in contaminations. The good thing is that the vaccines kind of prevented, I would say, severe cases, but slowly we saw more and more breakthrough contamination. That's why we decided to give a booster shot, because we realized that, unfortunately, the protection after two doses is waning after 5 to 6 months.
I understand that despite the early start of vaccinations, which was, to be honest, the envy of the world, only some 60% of the population is currently fully vaccinated with two doses. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. This is correct, but take into account that in Israel you have around 25% of kids that cannot get the vaccination. So overall, and don't forget also that we have around 10% of the people that are convalescent, that already got COVID, even more right now. We are nearing, I would say, 12 to 13%. So basically what you can say is that regarding the eligible population, we are around 85 to 90% of the population vaccinated.
Mm. Despite that high figure then, though, Israel has been seeing this third wave of the pandemic, the biggest it has seen in number of cases. What do you make of this latest wave?
Yeah, so basically what we understand, this was actually a scenario we predicted. I would say that what we saw in June was, you know, was surprising to see that the vaccines are working, I mean, at that, rate and preventing infections. You know, in June, we were surprised. What we thought would happen, and this is what is happening, is that the vaccines will prevent severe cases. But on the other hand, you will see contaminations. Now, the government has decided to live with COVID-19. The government has decided as a no lockdowns right now. The government has decided that we should base our assessment on what is happening in hospitals, meaning, you know, severe cases. The good news is that for around almost a month, we don't see a rise in severe cases. We are between 600 to 700. So even if we have a high number of daily contaminations, which are mainly children, basically, if you look at the contaminations, you will discover that 50% of those contaminations are people under the age of 19. So we believe that today we can see a high level of infections. But on the other hand, as long as the situation in hospitals, and it can change, but as long as the situation in hospitals is kind of stable, we are trying to live with COVID-19.
Right. So cases have been surging, but severe infections and cases and deaths are not rising as fast, you're saying.
Exactly.
So in response anyway to the surging cases, Israel has begun to drive administer booster shots at the beginning of August.
Yes.
Is there evidence that the booster shot is helping?
Yes, definitely. Basically, what we realized, it was in July. Actually, I was part of one of the committees that analyzed data, and we were kind of surprised to see that after 6 months, the protection from infection is waning. We could still see a good level of protection from severe cases, but the protection when you got only two doses was waning. And then we had to decide what should we do. So the first thing was to give a booster shot for people that were immunosuppressed. You know, the Delta variant is extremely contagious, the most contagious we have seen so far, but perhaps not the most dangerous, but the most contagious. And after we saw that it went okay, we decided to open vaccination for a booster shot the end of July, a month and a half ago, to people over the age of 60. And then gradually we lower the age. And what you can see today, for example, if I take the people over the age of 60, severe cases, and proportional to their part in the population, meaning unvaccinated, vaccinated with two doses, and vaccinated with a booster shot, when you analyze the data, you can clearly see that when you get, for example, two doses, the chances to go into severe condition is around four times less than if you're not vaccinated. But if you got the booster shot, the chances of getting into severe conditions are 40 times less than if you're not vaccinated. Meaning that the booster shot can really help preventing severe cases. We also have initial data that it can lower the viral load of people that are infected, can get infected perhaps in booster shot. But, you know, you see that the numbers of infections with the booster shot are very low. Most of the cases are usually unvaccinated. Then you have two doses and you have the booster shot. So the booster shot is making a real difference, especially when you look at younger people. Also, you see that vaccination is important. Most of the cases that you see in hospitals of young people are people that are not vaccinated, unfortunately.
I understand Israel's chief COVID-19 officer, Salman Zaka, called for the country to begin preparations for administering fourth coronavirus vaccinations. Is that how Israel envisions the future of living with COVID-19, regular booster shots every few months or every year?
I'll tell you the truth. I'm going to be honest. I'm a scientist, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't know. We don't know. I think it's too early to tell. What basically he said is that it is one of the possibilities. We have to say that we do not know how long those booster shots are going to be effective. We do not know which variant we're going to, you know, encounter in a month or in 2 months. So these are very early assessments. One of the possibilities, like we see, for example, with flu, is that, you know, every year you get a booster shot that is adapted to the variants and takes into account that, you know, there are changes in the type of viruses that can, you know, be endemic at that particular period of time. So we don't know, and we don't know if it's going to be a scenario that is similar to flu, or if those booster shots are going to last, you know, I don't know, 1 to 2 years, or if we're going to discover in 5 months that, again, we need to do something else. So what we believe today is that it is a possibility, but this is not the only possibility, and it's really too early to tell what is going to happen in a few months.
And finally, Professor Cohen, what do you think other countries can learn from what you've learned in your situation?
I think that there are several things. First, even if you believe that the pandemic is over, just keep some measures like mask indoors, like social distancing to some extent. I mean, you want to get back to routine, but there is a price to getting back to routine. So I think that you need to find the right balance. This is what Israel is trying to do. Second thing, you have to enforce those regulations. I think that Israel is discovering that people are not always compliant, and we have to do more on that front. Third thing is transparency. If you have data, tell the people about that. Tell what we're seeing. If we believe that the vaccines are no longer efficient as they were a few months ago, tell the people, because they have a right to know. And at the end of the day, we believe that the scenario, the most plausible scenario, is that people are going to get infected. We know that infection by itself is better, is more protective than the vaccine, at least for two doses. We'll see what's going on with three doses. But at the end of the day, we believe that we're going to combine both natural exposure, you know, not on purpose, of course, and also vaccines to prevent severe cases. And we really hope, this is our hope, that we'll be able to successfully live with COVID-19.
Well, Professor Cohen, you've given us plenty of food for thought, and we appreciate you making the time to connect with us today. And we wish you the best for your country in the fight against COVID.
Thank you. Likewise, Kamzanida, and all the best.
That was Professor Cyril Cohen from Bar-Ilan University in Israel. Next, we continue on with our Living with COVID special with a roundtable discussion featuring some leading experts in Korea. That's coming up next. To further discuss our theme today of living with COVID, I'm delighted to say that we have a panel of guests who have joined us now in this studio. Hopefully, through this discussion, we'll be able to explore some of the risks and challenges that lay ahead, as well as lay to rest any misconceptions so that we can get a clearer picture of what to expect in the coming weeks and months, our new normal, as they say. Let me go around the table now and introduce our guests. First, we have Dr. Jerome Kim, the Director General of the International Vaccine Institute, which is an independent non-profit organization dedicated to helping discover, develop and deliver vaccines for global health. Dr. Kim, welcome back on the show.
Thank you.
And next to him, we also have Dr. Yi Han Song, a Doctor of Internal Medicine at Severance Hospital, one of the nation's oldest, largest and most prestigious university hospitals in Korea. Dr. Yi, it's great to have you in the studio for once today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And for the first time on the show as well, we have another Dr. Kim, Dr. Kim Sung-taek, head of the Zoonotic Virus Lab at Institute Pasteur Korea, a research institute member of the world-renowned Biomedical Research Center, Institute Pasteur. Dr. Kim, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, to kick things off, I thought we'd start with a quick overall assessment of the current COVID-19 situation in Korea and the nation's handling of it. Let me start with you, Dr. Jerome Kim. How would you describe South Korea's handling of the pandemic?
So I think it's important to take this in context. I'm an American. And so what is the government supposed to do? It should minimize the impact of the disease on society. And it should, as much as possible, allow the country to continue to function economically. And you know, when you look at the United States, you see probably not such a good picture. But when you look at Korea and the number of deaths Korea has had in a pandemic that has killed 4.5 million people around the world and infected over almost 300 million, Korea has actually done pretty well from the perspective of preserving life and minimizing the impact on the Korean economy, which has grown faster than most of the other economies in the world. So from that perspective, you know, the government did well, considering the circumstances.
Dr. Yi, what do you think? Especially coming from South Korea, some South Korean people have expressed concern about perhaps South Korea's slow acquiring of vaccines and perhaps some of the social distancing regulations, about some confusion over there. What do you think?
So I think, let me just comment on the current situation of Korea. I think the current state is, the current status of Korea is, there's this force that propels the pandemic and many factors and measures that suppress it. They're kind of in a equilibrium state. And I think what the government has done well, despite the accusations that they acquired the vaccines pretty late, is that they have turned this thing around, and through aggressive vaccine campaigns, I think the pandemic response is driving in sort of a right way. But there still are three major events or developments that can make the situation take a bad turn. First one is Chuseok, of course, the biggest holiday. There obviously will be many people moving around the country, which will probably provide the virus to spread from the hot zones and seed into the effectively low affected areas. Second one would be our weathering of the challenge, the dual challenge of battling not only against COVID-19, but also the influenza. Right. And the third one is the emergence of, you know, various strains that could render the current vaccines ineffective. So how the way the Korean government handled those can dictate how we will fare in the late winter, right, and in the coming days.
So some concerns there expressed by Dr. Yi Han Song. Dr. Kim Sung-taek, what about you?
Well, actually, experts actually talked about some general things and then some surrounding situation. And I think that most of the, well, the thing that we have done so far, I think the mostly just government-driven just efforts, and then the people somehow just voluntarily just follow despite of their loss and the sufferings. And but I think to the most extent, I mean, we actually learned great lessons from the MERS outbreak in the year 2015. And then that was, we had made some mistakes, but then that was a very just a big lesson. So then that's how just we can just come up with some better just a response to the this current COVID-19.
Right, so the 2015 MERS epidemic perhaps laid the groundwork for us to, South Korea at least, to better deal with the current situation that they found themselves in with this COVID-19 pandemic. Now, South Korea is racing towards its set target of vaccinating at least 70% of the population with two doses, and it looks like the nation is on track to achieve that before November. Dr. Yi, in your opinion, how important do you think it is to reach that target now?
Well, as you know, our country has a robust, easily accessible healthcare system, which can support our aggressive vaccination campaign. So I don't think many people doubted or disputed the fact that the Korea government, as announced, could reach its goal. But achieving herd immunity is a totally different story.
Mm.
In order to achieve herd immunity, the total population, out of the total population, 80 to 90% maybe, has to have some sort of immunity through various methods, which includes getting the shots or getting infected themselves. Given the reduced efficacy of the current vaccines, especially against the Delta variants and the upcoming strains, I don't think it's possible for us to achieve herd immunity, per se. But as we see in other countries like Singapore and Israel, which have done a tremendous job in getting 80 to 90% of the population with the full doses, but their cases seem to go up day by day. So I think there needs to be another layer of protection, maybe a booster for a third shot for many of the population.
Dr. Jerome Kim, what are we seeing around the world with the effectiveness of vaccines and this idea of herd immunity? South Korea had initially set 70% of the population vaccinated and that would help us get to herd immunity. Is that still the same now?
So that's a great question because, you know, when we look at the different vaccines that are in use around the world, the efficacy, which is tested in these big phase 3 trials, goes anywhere from 50% to 95% in the case of the Pfizer mRNA vaccine. And so people think, well, then obviously Pfizer is the one that we need to take. But when you look at effectiveness, how well does the vaccine actually work when it's not in a clinical trial, when it's out in the community under real world conditions? In general, the vaccines have all been, you know, 75, 80, 85% effective in keeping, in reducing severe infection. And hospitalization and death are even higher in terms of effectiveness, and they tend to group at above 80%. So the vaccine, when we look at the real world data, the vaccines look a lot more similar. And the ones that are approved by WHO actually do show data. The problem is we have a lot of effectiveness data from high-income countries, from the United States, from Israel, from the UK. But we don't have a lot of information on the use of vaccines, and particularly the lower efficacy vaccines in low and middle-income countries. And those are the countries more likely to use them. And what we're seeing is that, you know, we already knew that the vaccines weren't going to prevent infection, which raises a big question about whether they prevent transmission, which is a big part of herd immunity. So the idea is, you vaccinate enough people, and the vaccinated people protect the unvaccinated people. But the problem with COVID-19 is now we have the Delta variant. And it looks like even if you get the Pfizer vaccine, the amount of virus that you have if you get infected in your throat is not different comparing unvaccinated and vaccinated. And that may mean that you're able to transmit as efficiently. And that's actually a difficult problem. The only benefit is that the duration of the positivity appears to be shorter if you're vaccinated. So again, there might be an effect. But what we really don't understand is the indirect protection, which is a part of the impact. And that's where herd protection comes in. And we don't have data yet. And I think that those studies are going to be important because in the end, to have herd protection, we need to break transmission. And that's proven to be much more difficult than we thought.
So it seems like there's still a lot of question marks remaining. Dr. Kim Seung-taek, do we still need, though, at least 70%, 80% of the population vaccinated. Is that a target we have to get to? Is that this? Is vaccines really the only way to tackle the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, vaccine is by far the most important just the weapon that we can just use, and then it should be just so low cost, and then it's going to be just used for as many as possible. But then we need some another weapon. I would say just compare this vaccine as the shield, and then the drug as the sword. Mm. And then there are many drugs already being developed and being used.
You mean for treatment?
Yeah, for treatment. Mm. And then there are also some drug candidates that are being actually tested in maybe some phase 2 and phase 3 clinical trials right now. And then for just concerning the treatment options for right now, there are some. And then I wanted to actually emphasize that no single drug can treat all the patients of COVID-19, because COVID-19 is sometimes the people call it a biphasic disease, which means it has two different periods or phases. The first phase is the sort of just a virus replication phase, and the second phase is an inflammatory phase. Mm. So depending on the which phase or period those COVID-19 patients are, we have to use different kinds of the drugs. So, for example, one of the first drugs that has been just developed and approved was the remdesivir. And then this is the injection drug and then used for some the patients with the severe COVID-19. And then there are some other drugs such as some monoclonal antibodies. And then so far, four different monoclonal antibodies were actually successfully developed. The first two were actually developed from the U.S. Companies, Eli Lilly and Regeneron. Mm. And the third one is Celltrion, the Korean company. And the third one is Via Biotechnology and the GSK. And all those, the monoclonal antibodies actually just block the virus entry. So it has to be used in some early phase of just a COVID-19. And then efficacy is pretty good. I mean, they are actually just blocking the transition, the progression to the severe disease by approximately 70 or 80%, so thereby just reducing the mortality. And so other drugs that we can just talk about is dexamethasone, and then that's the steroid drugs. And that was actually proven, that actually just proven the clinical efficacy in the UK, some extensive clinical trials. And then recently some tocilizumab and then baricitinib also just were proven some clinical efficacy for the patient with some severe later phase of the COVID-19 as well.
So not just vaccines, we need treatment at the same time to deal with the pandemic moving forward as well. It's an important weapon, as you've put it. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how to live with COVID-19 now. The government said it will start considering a transition to the COVID-19 management system in November after 70% of the population has completed full vaccination. That's two shots. Senior Health Ministry official Song Yong-le said the country is likely to see the benefits of expanded vaccinations from November, such as in reduction in new serious and fatal cases. The government plans to transition into a system that focuses on the management of serious cases and death toll over just reducing the number of total cases. Dr. Yi, do you think we're ready to move into this new transition?
Well, I think that the conversation is a little premature. It would send the wrong messages to people, to the public, that the pandemic may be over and embolden people in the wrong ways. It is important for the government to plan early and get ready, but the implementation should start at least after the flu season, because we have the challenge of fighting those two diseases in the same period, and the COVID-19 itself is putting a lot of strain on the healthcare system right now, and we don't want to complicate things at least for a couple of months. So I think what the speaker said was to kind of encourage people, but my opinion is it's a little too early for the conversation. We should get ready, but it's a little too early.
Dr. Chuan Kim, do you think it's too early?
So at this point, I think, the government needs to start thinking, which is exactly the point Dr. Lee made. The government needs to start thinking about the system that it will use at the point where enough people are vaccinated that that we don't necessarily have to feel that we have to track every last person, that we're really monitoring hospital utilization and ICUs. But that's going to be a complicated formula and require very, very close attention. For instance, we're going to have to keep up surveillance because we need to know if a new variant appears in Korea or elsewhere. And we can only do that if we maintain some level of testing and sequencing. And it has to be complete because I think we've been unfortunately surprised too often with COVID-19. And the efforts of the government are very laudable, but it's difficult to go backwards. And we also found out actually earlier this summer even that if the messages are not absolutely clear, they become very difficult to enforce and they get very difficult to get people to follow. So they have to be very careful and plan very, you know, in the same way that they planned in the beginning parts of the pandemic, they're going to need to use their experience in the last series of outbreaks to really understand what it will take, what their backup plans are, and then prepare people for it because the communication of these changes is going to be very important. I think the one last thing is, you know, there's already modeling data that, especially with the Delta variant, that we should not just take off our masks. That even when we get to 70%, we have to be very careful in the combination of what we call non-pharmacological interventions, so NPIs, which are the masks and distancing, in addition to vaccine, are going to do much better than vaccine alone. In fact, if we go without the masks, the modeling suggested, and this was before the U.S. actually experienced it, that you could actually prolong a pandemic with Delta. So I think we have to be very consistent in messaging and continue to be consistent in messaging around the vaccine and other preventions as well.
Dr. Kim Seung-taek, what do you make of the government's plans that they've announced so far about transitioning into a new phase?
Well, as two just experts just talked about, I think just a transition, I mean, the mentioning the transition should just also just accompanied with the some other the cautious, precautious, just some explanation. Like for example, like after vaccination, the vaccine is not actually, it was actually pretty effective that we actually using right now. The vaccine actually developed to just the prevent disease, not the infection. So the, for example, like lifting just a mask mandate is really, it's not really a good idea. So in the, at least even after just the transition to just a normal just a life, we, at least for the short-term period, maybe just at least for short-term period, we should just keep the masking, wearing mask, and then some keep this, maintaining just a physical distance. That's very important. I mean, considering the principles of the vaccine development that we have right now.
In earlier interviews that we had on the show today with Dr. Brian Kim at the KDCA and Dr. Cyril Cohen in Israel, we talked about how when restrictions were eased, there was a spike in infections, even though there was a very high vaccination rate among the population. Is that something we should be expecting as well, Dr. Kim?
Well, I think that's actually, even after vaccination, we actually also just think about the some human behaviors. Because there are certain people, for example, like some anti-vax groups, or some people like really just afraid of the vaccine because of some side effects. So there are still some vulnerable people to infection. But even after just the vaccination, like I said before, the even vaccinated people actually can be vulnerable to the infection. For example, like in this case, we are actually talking about some booster vaccination. The reason why we're talking about the booster is that the immunity wanes over the time. The one of the main key player after vaccination is a neutralizing antibody. That actually circulating antibody is over a period after the completing vaccination, that actually just wanes. That's pretty known the fact. But the other the key players of vaccination still just seem to be pretty good. I mean, preventing just a severe disease. For example, like a T cell immunity and also some memory B cells, memory T cell. So the immunity is waning. So that we have to in this case, maybe at least for just we can be vulnerable to the infection. So that considering that kind of just a scientific evidence, we should just keep at least some control measures to be maintained.
We've mentioned the booster shots a couple of times already. We talked earlier on the show in Israel. They've started their third rounds of shots. They've began their booster shot program in August. When we spoke to Dr. Brian Kim from the KDCA, he said the South Korean government is still watching the situation, that they want to give the extra shots, the booster shots, to those in the most vulnerable groups. But for the wider public, that they're still waiting to see more evidence, and that they're still waiting to see, you know, whether it's needed. Dr. Jerome Kim, what do you think about the need for booster shots? Is South Korea, should South Korea be thinking about that?
So I think that if a person has a condition, an immunocompromising condition, something that decreases their ability to defend the body against infection, that they may need booster shots. And I think that's pretty clear. The what's really not clear, and actually some colleagues of mine wrote a commentary in The Lancet, published in the last few days, where they really, I think, very convincingly argued that we think that, well, what we know about the booster doses is that they raise the level of protective antibody. But what we don't know is whether that actually corresponds to increased protection against severe infection, hospitalization, and death. And that is actually what we want the booster doses to do. You know, there were concerns and reports that the effectiveness of the, for instance, the Pfizer RNA vaccines were dropping over time. The problem is that at the same time that was happening, a new variant had appeared, Delta. And we already know that Delta doesn't respond as well to the protective immune responses that are generated by the vaccine. So, you know, really we need to wait to see that these boosters are actually doing something other than protecting cells in a test tube. And are they really protecting people from the outcomes that we need to avoid? There is now one study out of Israel that was published, I think, yesterday or the day before in the New England Journal of Medicine that suggested that they do, in fact, and particularly in the older age groups, see some level of reduction in hospitalization. That needs to be confirmed, like many things. I mean, the U.S. didn't see necessarily the same impact of Delta on effectiveness as they saw in Israel. And again, these get to the way these, when you're doing a clinical trial in a very controlled situation, you know, you have a very clean answer. When you're looking at data from the real world, you have to deal with all the different things that happen in the real world, and you have to control for them using statistical means. And that actually sometimes causes things to look either worse or better than they actually are when we do additional studies. So just a caution about making sure that we have the data that the vaccine is actually protecting people against bad outcomes.
So I feel like you're saying we don't really know yet whether we need more booster shots, or whether that will be something that we live with in the future. For example, we had imagined that perhaps with booster shots, we'll need a booster every year or every few months to keep our immunity against COVID-19 up. Is that not the picture?
So if the question is, do I believe that there's a booster in our future? I think that that's correct, that there is. When is the big question? Mm-hmm. And for instance, I received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and it looks like the levels of neutralizing antibody for Johnson & Johnson are stable out to 6 months, and that it may be that the booster doses are necessary at month 8 or month 9. With Pfizer, it looks like the antibody levels drop, but they're dropping from a very high level. So the question is, do you really need that much antibody, and do you really need to have 10 times more? Is it really going to protect? It's like we're wearing 5 raincoats instead of 1. Those are important questions, because the amount of vaccine that we have right now is limiting. And in the poorest countries of the world, only 2% of people have received a single dose. And, you know, we know some things, right? We know that there are outbreaks, and we know outbreaks generate variants. And we know variants cause outbreaks, and that is a vicious cycle. And we can only break that cycle everywhere in the world if enough vaccine gets out to everybody. And so the timing of the booster doses needs to reflect the science, and also should consider the bigger picture of the pandemic, because everything that's happening in a place where a pandemic outbreak is occurring that we don't know anything about, and variants that we don't know anything about, raises a threat for all of us. Maybe not today, but maybe tomorrow or a month from now.
Dr. E, can you maybe try to paint a picture for us then? After everything we've talked about today, and in your expert opinion, how we what the picture is going to be like for how we live with COVID-19 in the coming weeks and months, considering what the government is saying, considering what the effectiveness of the vaccines we know so far, whether we're going to need booster shots. How would you describe to the people, how would you prepare them for the future?
So I don't expect it to be much different from what we are experiencing right now. Maybe they will let us take off our masks outdoors, but the mask mandate for indoors will strictly be enforced. We'll probably be subject to thermal scans and verifications of visits when we enter buildings, restaurants, or any businesses. The booster shots, that's a tough question. If we had enough, I think the government would not hesitate giving them around, especially for the vulnerable population. But it is what it is. We don't have them. So I think they're trying to decide which population to give it to, because if you want to, you know, prevent people from dying or keep people out of the ICU, I think the way to go is giving the booster shot, the third one, to the vulnerable population. As Dr. Jerome Key mentioned, the people with immunocompromised situations or chronic diseases. If you want the economy up and running again, it's important to give the full doses to the general population. While they are deciding on that, it's going to be a tough question, which involves ethical dimensions. And I really hate to be in the shoes of those who are stirring those kind of decisions. But the scene that I mentioned, the masks will still be there. I don't think they will let us, you know, take off masks indoors.
So, Dr. Kim Seung-tae, I think you will also agree that masks will still be around. But what else should we be looking out for? How else do you think you would prepare people for what's coming ahead?
Well, since we already talked about just wearing masks, I think another thing that I want to just emphasize is the complete vaccination schedule. Because according to just a recent report, that there was some efficacy just changes for like alpha variant and the delta variant. That was a test result for just the AstraZeneca vaccine and then the Pfizer vaccines. So after first shot, the efficacy was less than 50% for both, for both variants. But after second shot, then the efficacy actually just increased by about just 40% or 50%. So I think that's pretty good scientific evidence that show the why people just should just complete their vaccination schedules. So that is actually very good. And well, now just we are actually approaching the 70% of vaccination, the first shot in Korea. But now the people, now it's not the time to just relax and then just we have to just keep going and then complete our vaccination schedule.
You say we have to keep going, but for people, we want to lift restrictions. We want to meet people again. We want to go back to some sort of normalcy. Is there no roadmap for that at the moment?
Completely taking off a mask, I think we should wait for still just I cannot tell for sure when it would be possible, but at least for earlier next year, no, I don't think so. But for a while, yeah.
Well, we are approaching the end of our time already, but perhaps we can end by just giving us your final thoughts as we go around the table. Dr. Jerome Kim, perhaps a message to our audience about what we should expect in the days to come.
So I think that it's important to remember why we wear masks. You know, and I wasn't a big mask believer, actually, in the beginning part of the pandemic, because most of my experience was coming from our medical experience in using masks to prevent, say, influenza. It doesn't actually, masks work much better protecting other people from you than they do protecting you from others. And their ability to protect other people, if you happen to be affected, is substantial. So the reason to keep wearing masks isn't because you've been vaccinated or isn't because, we know that it's going to protect you from infection. The reason is that you want to protect the people around you, the people you work with, the people in your family, the people you go out with. You want to protect them from infection. So I think we have to change our thinking about masks to understand that this is something we do for everybody. I think that the second part of this is, and this gets to, I understand the government is justified in saying we want to protect the Korean people first because that's their responsibility. As a global health person, I'm thinking about, you know, the 98% of people living in low-income countries who haven't been vaccinated yet. And I'm thinking that, you know, not only have they not been vaccinated, but they don't have enough diagnostic equipment for us to even tell that they are having big outbreaks. And that's a blind spot. And we don't know what variants are there. That's another blind spot. And again, these are things which in the longer term could seed the next outbreak of vaccine-resistant COVID. And we need to know that before it becomes a real problem. And so there's a lot that Korea can do in terms of global health leadership and helping countries understand what the nature of the pandemic is. And then ultimately through, you know, the Korean vaccine industry, providing vaccines at low cost and high quality for people all over the world.
Dr. Yi, a final message for our listeners, but also maybe ask one more question. Maybe this time next year, next Chuseok, do you think we will be in a better place than now, or do we have to think even longer than that with this COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, I think by the time you mentioned, the effects of the vaccines might have kicked in. And we've learned through the past year and a half that vaccines and masks provide the best protection. So I like to finish by telling the people, call upon people's sense of duty and empathy to join in and wear masks, getting vaccinated. And I know it's asking a lot, but again, exercise the curve-flattening spirit they had from the outset. That's the message I want to deliver to our listeners.
Dr. Kim Seung-taek, finally as well, your final thoughts, and maybe if I add a question, will there be an end to the COVID-19 pandemic at some point in the future?
Maybe we can be some less burden compared to that we have right now. But the viruses will stay with us probably forever. One of the reasons is that this is not just causing just infections in the human. This is actually coming, just actually spill over from some of the animal origins. So this kind of a genetic, just the viruses. In these cases, the viruses, even though just, theoretically, I mean, imaginary, we just completely eradicated the viruses from the human society, some remnants of the virus will just reside in the animal kingdom. And then if there is any just chances, then the viruses will again just spill over to the human. And then one of the just the biggest host of some emerging viruses is bats. And the bats is actually occupy a substantial portion of the mammals and the entire just the planet. So we cannot actually just eradicate all the bats out of this planet. So it is really just difficult somehow. So we have to actually think about just a way to just coexist with the virus by just developing and just a vaccine, very effective vaccines, and also some drug development. And then lastly, I was in line with Dr. Jerome Kim said, I think I want to just quote that no one is safe until everyone is safe.
On that note, we'll leave it there. I'd like to thank our panel of guests today, Dr. Jerome Kim, Dr. Lee Han-sung, and Dr. Kim Seung-taek. We appreciate you making the time to come in today, and I believe it will have been a very interesting insight for our listeners. We hope you have a great Chuseok holiday, and we'll perhaps talk to you again next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is where we wrap up our special today. Our regular Korea 24 show will be back on Thursday. So do join us again then to get your daily dose of Korean news and analysis as usual. Until then, we hope you enjoy the rest of the Chuseok period. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.
KBS World Radio.